Good afternoon, or good morning. Hello, Rollins. This is KREWLP broadcasting from Rollins, Wyoming. Let's Talk Rollins. And we're on the internet simulcasting across the globe and in Carbon County just for you. It's your radio station. Tell us what you want to talk about, and we'll get you on the air with your own show or with an interview like we're having right now with a candidate for the Wyoming Secretary of State office, Mr. C.J. Young.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's a privilege to have you here. We've been interviewing or having conversations with city council candidates, but you're the big cheese today.
I don't know about that, but it's good to be here. Yeah, I'll tell you who I am. You know, I grew up in Rollins for my local Carbon County listeners. I grew up actually out of Fort Steele on a ranch. And so my dad's a physician here in town, Dr. Young. And so grew up here in Carbon County, went through high school here, ended up after I finished that, I did community college, got my 2-year degree through the extension here at Western Wyoming Community College. And then I went over to University of Wyoming and at UW, ended up getting a bachelor's, master's, JD. Eventually moved to Cheyenne to kind of get started there. I opened a business called Olympus Games. So it's a brick and mortar retail. Worked for state government for about 10 and a half years.
Also, you have some experience.
I do. I started off at Department of Corrections, and which everyone in Rollins is familiar with. So that job, I did that 8.5 years, brought me back to Rollins a lot to help work out at the state penitentiary, but the other prisons around the state as well. Really enjoyed that work. A lot of great people out there that do good work. And then became the state elections director. So I did that for a little over 2 years. So helped run the 2024 general and primary election.
Well, got your feet in deep water right away.
I did. I jumped in and kept trudging away there. And then I do a lot with a group called Civil Air Patrol. So I do a lot of youth program development. And then I'm a officer in the U.S. Navy Reserve. So I got a couple hats I wear. So,
well, congratulations on all of that
stuff. Yeah, thank you.
Very, very comforting for someone who doesn't know anything about anything. And that's me. So I'm learning something every day. Thank you. Yeah. By the way, is it CJ or Mr. Young?
No, call me CJ.
CJ?
Yeah, you call me CJ. So yeah, my real name's Charles Young. So I was Charles Young the second because my dad is Charles Young. But growing up, everyone called me CJ, and that's what everyone knows me by. That knows me.
Oh, good. You know, civility is very important. We've lost a lot of that. And
100% agree.
Civility goes with honor. If you don't have any honor, you don't really care. But when you do care, you can say, this is what I prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sorry, we're not talking pronouns.
Get into hot water right away. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've said who you are. What do you, in a different sense of the question, what are you?
So I would say I am someone who cares about the state and Wyoming, its people and its culture and its communities and the countryside. And, you know, when I finished school, I had the opportunity to go out to Washington, D.C. to pursue kind of the work I was looking at. But I made a very conscious choice to want to stay in Wyoming, and because I wanted to live here. I wanted to be here. And pretty much my whole life, I've been driven by what you do when you get up in the morning matters, and it should matter, and you need to feel motivated that you make a difference. And so that's why I've done things like Civil Air Patrol or the Navy, right? I don't do it for the money. I do it because I want to serve, and that's why I decided to run for this, because I knew I could do a good job at it, and I knew I knew the state and the office, and so I could get in there and do it effectively. So that was what motivated me to do it, because I think what I am is what drove me to do this.
That's great, because you answered my next question about your motivation.
Yeah.
And my last question in the host question category of what I'm doing is, in a broad sense, without getting into too much detail, by the way, I forgot to ask when you came in, How are we done on time? Do you want to do this? We can do half an hour?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's no problem. Was it however long you want me here for?
Okay, because I don't want to run you out.
No, we're fine.
Running for office is running around all the time.
I've got the PBS debate for Secretary of State tonight at 7 in Riverton, so I don't have to be there till 6. So we're good.
For everybody in the audience, there you just got a heads up. PBS tonight, what time?
7 p.m. For folks, if anyone's listening in Fremont County, they're doing it over at the Riverton and the Community College there in their auditorium. But they are going to be broadcasting it online and on TV on PBS. So really? Wyoming PBS.
I know a lot of people here in Rollins that do listen to PBS.
Okay, yeah. So that'll be on tonight. I believe it's 7 to 8:30, I believe.
Good. Okay. And big, major first question. Mm-hmm. Getting out of the small talk and into the real
talk.
What changes or ends are you seeking during your term of office as a Secretary of State?
So, you know, before I even ran for this position or decided I was going to run, I always had in my head, if I was ever the Secretary, what would I change? What would I do? So that's something I've thought about when I was the Elections Director and thought about since then. And so getting into it, what I really want to do is modernization. That's really the key thing that the office needs. And it needs that for a couple reasons. One, it needs modernization to make it easier for folks in Wyoming to do their business. For example, business filings with the Secretary of State's office. It needs some new technology, so it streamlines it on the front end. It needs that technology to reduce the amount of work on the staff in the office to free them up a little bit. And it does another thing, the technology. I know one thing I hear when I go around is people are concerned about fraudulent companies or people using shell companies in Wyoming. Well, if we look at that new technology, that can also help flag to our staff maybe problem entities, people that are acting in bad faith, so we can look at it a little more deeply. So I think that that's a key thing is modernization. I really kind of have three. The second one is we need to, in our election world, I think for the security piece, so I'm a Navy intel officer. There are threats. There are big countries. Look at Wyoming, too. If they think we're an easy target, they're going to go after us because that is a way to backdoor into higher systems. And so we're just as vulnerable as any other state. So we need to make sure we focus on that technology. I want to get some folks in there that can help with investigations if it's brought up or some experts on that tech side, which we already have some great tech folks there. But we can build those partnerships to keep that tech side and the election side secure. And there's a training piece, too. You know, Wyoming County clerks are really the ones that do elections on the ground. And so if the office, how I see it, it's not to dictate to the clerks, it's to help the clerks and support the clerks and create uniformity. And so if we bring in the staff that can go out to the communities and go drive to where they need to go, drive to Rollins, drive to Worland, so that they can help train those new staff. That's kind of the second piece. And the third piece, the Secretary of State sits on a lot of boards that have a great effect on the state, whether it's investments, construction, or lands. And you need to make sure that my approach would be everyone coming in, there's no predetermined policy, right? Everyone coming before me is going to have a fair shake. I'm going to look at what you have to say. We're going to talk to members in the community, the stakeholders to make the best decision and not apply a one size fits all to everybody that comes before the boards. That's kind of my three big ones that I really want to focus.
That's good. And your comments lead me to a couple other things that I'm going to forget in the meantime because I'm short memory span. But one of the things, by the way, I grew up all over the world. I was a service brat, you know, living in dependent housing made out of wood and drywall when we first invented drywall, believe it or not. But so I've been around for a while. I've been around for a long time. I spent 40 years in California. I lived it there. I was going to be a mercenary, but wound up in high tech instead.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things that happened that drove me to Wyoming. Wyoming's a great place. I love it. Mm-hmm. Rollins is good. I love it here too. I'll die here eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But all my life I believed what I was told until I started kept finding why is that? How can they do that? How can they get away with that?
Mm-hmm.
Constitutionally, legally, and otherwise, policy wise. And I got to be very good in California at litigating the motor vehicle code.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard. The problem with litigating in California was half of the problem of prevailing in any sort of litigation is knowing the political landscape.
Yes.
You got to choose the judge. It's a story that needs to be told only by experience. When I was told in California by several judges, appellate judges, that yeah, that's the law, Mr. Nicol, but that's not how we do it here. Okay, that was the last straw. Then I moved to Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Wyoming is different in many, many ways. But one of the other things, and I think California may have resolved it, was, and this is specifically regarding Secretary of State, is that when the legislature does what they do to pass laws, statutes, and policies for the state, there's usually, and I'll use California as an example, there is a legislative intent that is part of the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
In California, up until maybe a year ago, and I don't know what it is in Wyoming, but the departments interpreted the statutes without regard to the legislative intent.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, the statute doesn't mean anything. It's what the department
what the agency says. Yep.
Do you have any idea what the deal is here in Wyoming in regard to legislative intent being mandatory or just advisory?
Boy, that's a phenomenal question. And I could go on this one for a long time, but I'll try to keep it pretty direct. So I did go to UW College of Law, right? And one of the things you first learn when you go to law school here is that Wyoming is a very different state than other states, right? We don't have, generally our statutes aren't as detailed. We also don't have the same depth of case law from the Supreme Court getting into interpretations that a state like New York or California does. They're just older, they have more cases, intermediate appellate courts, we don't have that. So when you practice law in Wyoming or when you're looking at our regulations, there's often not a lot of guidance. There's often a lot of information. And when you try to get to legislative intent in Wyoming, and there's kind of two pieces, what the agencies do and what the law is. And I kind of start with the law. When you look at what the law is, the only thing you can really do for legislative intent is you go look at the recordings from the House or the Senate. You look at what was talked about, what were they trying to get to when they passed this. And sometimes there's a good amount. Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes stuff comes up, there's very little discussion. And I've never been a legislator. I'm not a legislator. But I know a lot of legislators, and I've sat in a lot of those hearings, and this is purely my opinion. I think there's probably a lot of discussion offline behind the scenes about what they want to work on and what they want to get done. And so that when it comes to the floor, if it's already been somewhat kind of hashed out behind the scenes, you may not get the depth of the official record to know necessarily what the intent was. So that can make it hard for lawyers and citizens and agencies to try and figure out what are they trying to do. Now, if you look at the agencies, right, I worked for one of the big five, the Department of Corrections. Department of Corrections we had tremendous latitude in our regulations, tremendous latitude. There's essentially statutes that say the Department of Corrections shall enforce rules for discipline. The Department of Corrections shall have, can levy fines on inmates, right? That's all it says. There's nothing else. And so I was the policy planning director for DOC. That was my last job there. And so when you're looking at that, there's kind of several factors you have to consider in looking at those regulations. What is the goal? What is our end state of goal? What are we trying to achieve with this?
Not to interrupt you, but that's where I'm headed. Mm-hmm. And that question is that when you make those policy decisions, or to what extent are your policy decisions at the department and enforcement level related to the intent of the legislature when they made that particular statute? Because you can, if the legislature says we want to do this because of X, Y, and Z, and then they put that out, the department heads will look at that and they say, well, we don't like that part of 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. We got our own idea about that, so we're going to do our way, not the way the legislature intended it, because the law as it's written allows us to do what we want to.
So, honestly, it's not an easy question to answer, because there's a lot that goes into it. The first thing you have to look at is frequently the people doing policy at agencies, they're not lawyers. I was, but some are, but most aren't. They're generally extremely busy. and there's generally not enough of them. Yeah. And so when I became the policy planning director for Department of Corrections, I kind of had this high-minded ideal of like, I'm going to get to sit down and analyze it and figure out how do we make it better and what's the goal and is there studies on it? And the reality is you're busy fixing a form and trying to make it fit into this page. And, you know, we changed this word to be this word. And now I have to go through 90 pages and make sure it changed all of it. To be honest with you, that's a lot of what policy directors are doing. On the flip side, I'll kind of pull back the curtain when DOC made policy, right? What we would do is we would get together in the room. I'd get together with the people who are in charge of that area. And we would just go through on a screen line by line and go, what is this doing and do we think it works? That was about as much thought went into it. And there is absolutely in Wyoming in our agencies and a self-awareness that the bigger the effect on people's lives, the more we need to look into it, right? If I'm looking at, I'll say, okay, the real example, when are we going to allow visitors? Can they come in Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or is it Tuesday, Thursday? Probably most people aren't going to sue us over that. Most people are probably just going to look at it and go, oh, well, I guess I can't come Wednesday now. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of thought is going into that. It's just like, we got to get this done. What's updated? Done. If it's something that is going to restrict a constitutional right, if it's something that we know is going to create a lot of outcry or pushback, that's where you go a lot deeper. And that's where we would ask the Attorney General's office to weigh in and advise, what was the legislator intending? What does the statute allow? Where is this too far? Is this not enough? And ultimately, I know in the end, the directors of those agencies is where the buck stops because they work for the governor. And ultimately, they're the ones that take the most heat, right? If the governor is getting 100 letters about, you know, ticked off citizens about something DOC did, governor's going to pick up the phone and call Dan Shannon and go, hey, Dan, what's going on with this? And so those directors want their staff to put a lot more effort, work, and research into that to know what will be the effects, what was the intent, what was the goal. So I guess to kind of answer your question, it depends. It's a sliding scale based on the importance of it, who it affects, is it interacting with a constitutional right? And the same thing happens in the Attorney General's office, right? Like a DOC, we had one attorney to advise an agency of 1,500 people that deals with some of the most complex civil rights possible. Mm-hmm. And so he was always overwhelmed with how much work he had to do. So a lot of times he's not going into deep dives over 3 days about what this means. He's giving you, let me read it real quick. I think it means this. He's on to the next thing. And so a lot of it in Wyoming is resources, it's expertise, and it's, to be honest with you, a lot of the statutes are not always clear what they're trying to do.
That's one of the things about Wyoming is that there aren't as many as there are in a place like California.
There's not. I did an internship with the Air Force JAG, and when we would look at Wyoming case law, like let's say for guardianship with a military family, you'd have like maybe 3 or 4 pages of law. Mm-hmm. And then if the family came in and they were from California originally, and we had to help advise on that. Now I'm reading 28 pages of law to try and figure it out. Yeah. So, but I would say to finish off on that, I think that Wyoming agencies, one thing that I have seen that I really do believe is true is that our agencies try. They try to do the right thing. Not to say there was maybe not a few bad apples, but I do think the majority of them try to say, we don't want to break the law. We don't want to make people's lives difficult. We want to just make this operable. That was always the key word. How do we make it work practically? Because the legislator writes the law, then the agencies have to figure out how the heck do you make it work. And that was the key phrase, is how do we make it operable?
And then you have the enforcement
yes.
The third level. And that gets complicated all by itself.
It does. Admin law is a whole big beast all to itself.
But that's part of your job as Secretary of State.
It is. Admin law. That's who promulgates the rules with us.
And I'll just do some of those elements. This is an abbreviated list of Secretary of State functions. And for anybody that's listening, you just have to go to the state of Wyoming, look under Secretary of State, and there's a detailed description of everything that the state Secretary of State does. So don't listen to me. Go look at the horse's mouth right there on the internet with the Secretary of State's webpage. I don't want to get into the application and operations of elections because that is a big issue in the United States right now. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to ignore that. It is what it is, and it's going to be whatever it turns out to be. But Secretary of State also deals, and this is a complex question subject because I have several questions that relate to it that don't seem like they're related, but mm-hmm. might be. Because, again, everything's related, in my opinion. The division assists with general, primary, bond, municipal, and special district elections.
Yes.
Here in Rawlins, I'll give a specific example. Recalling an elected official, we have no control over that. Unless at the state level, the state says that we can work on that problem if there's criminality involved, mm-hmm. and basically you have to be convicted of a crime to be able to be removed from office.
Yes.
But what do you do, and what does a community do, if we have people who are conniving and collaborating and working outside the public interest, and obviously so, and they're willing to tell you so in a public event, mm-hmm. like city council meeting.
So
the problem here is not that it's not possible. The state allows that we can provide that provision for disciplining mm-hmm. An abnormal activity, but it depends upon the council in this case to make that happen. If we want it to happen, they say no, it doesn't happen. How do you get around that? I understand the state legislature is looking at that problem mm-hmm. right now. I don't know what the result is. But when we have a majority of the city council that says ethics, we don't need an ethics policy because it just gets in the way of our deliberations. Mm-hmm. Or we have a mayor that says, if you don't like what I'm doing, you can unelect me at the next election. But we don't elect the mayor anyway. So, it's an empty threat and a way to divert attention from the problem into it's all your fault, it's not my fault. And if we have no way to deal with that without the permission of the people that are at fault in the first place, mm-hmm. that's a problem. It falls on the Secretary of State's office for the legislature to do, but the legislature is not going to do anything until they get a recommendation from your office.
So, boy, this is a broad topic.
I know it is.
It is. No, this. But you're the first one that's brought this up. So when I was the elections director, I can tell you Carbon County is not alone in these concerns. There were communities all across the state that had concerns with city councils or mayors, special districts, boards, all across the state of Wyoming. So this was common. This is a common issue. And the fact of the matter is that the statutes as they are now are not really contemplating removing people. There's just no mechanism for it.
Well, and it's a home rule kind of thing.
It is. And currently the only real way, unless it changes, to get rid of anybody is to vote them out of office. That's really, unless they get caught doing, like you mentioned in the beginning, criminal activity, there's no real way to get them out of there.
And excuse me, friend, my point here in bringing the question up in the first place is that the remedies we have are useless.
Yes.
If we have to wait 4 years to get rid of somebody, all of the damage that can be done during that period of non-compliance and inability to correct the non-compliance is senseless. It's like
absolutely.
If that's lawfare. If you've got a pocket full of money and you don't like somebody, plea bargaining, that's another one.
Yeah. And even if you do challenge in court, it's hard because Wyoming judges tend to give pretty extreme deference to elected officials because they do.
That's not the problem, though, because for me, I can't mm-hmm. take it to court. I've got a couple issues I would love to take to court in terms of libel and slander. But the reality is, in order to do that, I've got to come up with $5,000-$10,000 just up front just to be able to get.
Yep.
And I don't have that. So that means it's like plea bargaining. If I can't argue, the government's got all the resources and they're going to give me a chance to, I'm the line minutes and everything, I'll plead to illegal parking mm-hmm. just so I don't have to go to jail and spend $5,000-$10,000. That is a system that does not function properly.
It's Well, the first,
you're not the legislator.
I was going to say, the first thing I'd say is there's actually not a lot the secretary can do about it, unfortunately. But one of the things that, you know, I would want to work with the legislator on to advise them and study its effects, and it wouldn't just be me, it'd be a team of my elections folks that work in it every day, is do we want to look at how a proposed statute amendment for either like a recall or something to that effect that allows voters either, you know, by signatures or petition to say, you are doing such a terrible job, we want to recall you.
But in the case that I mentioned here, it doesn't make any difference whether we want to or not. If we don't get the approval and put the process into operation by the people that we're complaining about, they're never going to let us do it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the law says we can, if we have to look for somebody else's permission.
If the legislator creates a, let's call it a recall statute, that says if you get, I don't know, I'm making up a number here, 25% of your, whoever's in the district or the city or whatever that situation is, and you turn those in and they're certified by your city, county, or the clerk or the secretary of state's office.
The problem is it's not going to get certified if they don't want it to happen.
I'm going to push back on you, Henry. I don't agree there.
Okay.
Because
that's why we're talking.
Yeah. So I have been through certification processes as the elections director. If I'll use you as an example, if you go out and they're a registered voter and you get their address and their signature on that form and you get it to our office and we certify it, if you hit that number, it's going to make it to the ballot. It will make it to the ballot.
Is it going to get out of the city? Because the city's got a hand in that. And then the county's got a hand in it. What's that county give it to you?
In these areas, so it depends on the level. So this is all theoretical because this doesn't really exist right now. But
that's why we're having a conversation.
So theoretically, right, what you would probably see and what I would probably advocate for is if it's county or below for elected official, it gets certified in the county clerk's office. If it's anything outside of that, it would go to the Secretary of State's office. Because we have the ability to review those signatures to certify them in our system called WireReg, which is the voter database. So we're getting into some nuance here. When you're verifying signatures, because I've done this work, it's not easy, right? Because how somebody signed something 40 years ago to how they sign it today, or were they in a hurry, you give a little bit of deference and leeway. Is like, okay, this generally looks like their signature, right? The A looks like an A, how they sign it, right? If you hit those numbers, then you're going to make it to the ballot, right? And my point is it's a very mechanical system. If you insert the right amount of signatures and you want to pad it, you always know 10% is probably going to fail. That's pretty standard, maybe a little higher, maybe 20%. If you have a terrible, terrible, and it varies on your neighborhood, right? Generally, where people get caught up on this is not the signature. It's actually the registered address, because under Wyoming law, they have to be registered, and the address they list on their petition has to match what they're registered under. So if somebody's moved and forgot to update their voter registry, they're going to get kicked out.
So I'm with you there, and mm-hmm. I think that's where we need to look at this a little bit closer here in our local community, and that is, if we have a problem in the future, mm-hmm. what's gone is, what's past is past, but if we have a problem in the future, then regardless of what new legislation may be in the process, we should be able to put together a representative whatever kind of organization mm-hmm. for the people of the community. If we want to get rid of ward number one,
mm-hmm.
Then we have to work with the county office primarily,
yes.
Not the city office.
Correct.
And at that point in time, it becomes a matter of working out the details. And if we have a significant gripe, then we will figure out how to do that and take the time and money to do it. But at least you're on the side of being able to say, well, we need to look at that.
I think we should look at that. I think that there's, and I say that because, not because of my own personal experience with anything I've wanted to, you know, do a recall personally, but not that I've never had those feelings on somebody, but, you know, it's,
well, we all have those feelings.
We all have those feelings. But I say that from having been the elections director. I know this was an issue that impacted. And generally, here's where I really saw it big. A lot of times it's in our smallest towns of 100 people, 250 people. They get a mayor in there. And the thing is, in my experience, the smaller the town gets, the more personal it becomes. And you might get a mayor that says, well, the heck with all you people, I'm going to do what the heck I want, right? And everyone knows them and they all know each other. And it's almost like a family feud. And so some of the biggest fights and complaints I ever saw came out of towns of less than 100 people. And there, you know, if you had a recall statute, statistically, hell, you probably need 20 people to trigger a recall election. It's not many. Yeah. But I also think that would help keep some of those local officials a little more honest and knowing, hey, I better be acting in good faith and you know, be polite here and treat people well, because they can get together 19 friends and they can put me on a recall.
Yeah.
So I do think, I guess my takeaway is that there's enough problems and enough concerns I've heard from communities in Wyoming that it's for sure something we should look at doing.
Well, I'm totally in agreement with you. I write a lot of opinion columns and mm-hmm. I say a lot of stuff. Nobody ever replies to me, so I don't know if I'm, you know, a tinfoil hat or not. But one of the things about Wyoming, specifically southern Wyoming, where we live here, is these are small communities, and the common wisdom is that all politics is local. Mm-hmm. And if all politics is local, whatever the foreign policy of the United States is, it starts here in Bags and Elk Mountain and Rawlins. And the closer we are to the people that we put in the office, the better we ought to be able to know them. And I've said this 1,000 times in the last month. If you're going to go out and vote, even if you don't think your vote is worth anything, doesn't count for anything, do go out and vote and do talk to the people that you're going to be voting for. If you don't want your drunk nephew, Yahoo, just because you know him, put him in a position of responsibility for the mm-hmm. community. That's not going to work out. Talk to whoever you're talking to. You get to know them. You get to know the attitudes. And you don't go by what they tell you. If in a small community, you know who you're talking to by what they do and what they've done. So small communities have a great responsibility and a great ability to deal with the problems if they just start getting involved. You can't pretend let Charlie do it or let the government do it, because you're the one that is actually going to make those decisions.
Yes.
Somebody else makes your decisions for you. What are you going to complain about?
Absolutely. And it's not just a tagline. Every vote does matter, because I have seen races in Wyoming at local levels be won with 6 votes, 10 oh, yeah. votes, 12 votes.
Absolutely.
We've had ties before in our state.
That's
history.
The great thing about the small community.
Yeah.
It is up front and central, mm-hmm. close and personal. I want to change the subject now to another thing that
yeah.
is related, but in a different way. And it's covered by several aspects of the office. And one is to file campaign finance disclosure.
Yes. Reports. Yes.
And that gets, again, into a complicated thing, because mm-hmm. now you also have the responsibility to register lobbyists and retain
yes.
lobbyist disclosure reports.
Mm-hmm.
And as you look at the national news today, offices are bought and paid for. And those deal directly with that kind of problem. But then we have another problem here, which is a speculative question,
and
I'm not asking for an answer, just if you're thinking about it. And this is another area of the Secretary of State, and it has to do with the funding of this stuff. You want to have an organization that wants to do public service. How are they getting funded? Where's the money coming from? And in issuing bonds and negotiable documents and stuff, that also falls under the Secretary of State's mm-hmm. thing. And that leads me into a general question, a very speculative thing, which is on our doorstep and happening now. The Wyoming legislature passed a legislation that creates a stable coin.
Yes.
And the stable coin has got to be, in Wyoming anyway, it has to be backed by the United States dollar.
Mm-hmm.
United States. That leads into the tinfoil hat crowd, and I don't want to get into that. But in reality, a digital currency, not talking about Bitcoin and other crypto.
Ethereum,
not things crypto. Like that. We're not talking about cryptocurrencies. Okay. We're talking about
stable tokens. Yep.
And that's a transformation of our monetary and financial systems. Mm-hmm. It's not here, but it's emerging as mm-hmm. we speak. You know, it's the chicken with its beak breaking out of the egg shell.
Yes.
It's not the chicken yet, but he's getting out of that egg.
Yeah.
And when you add to that, the couple of things that people don't understand is your money in your bank, money is the dollars are fungible.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, when you put a dollar bill in there, it's not your dollar, it's just a symbol. And when we have equities, if you own stock, to the great extent today, you don't actually own the stock, you own a beneficial
interest in it. In the company.
But the stock ownership actually goes into a couple of different layers, the local and international, where those your stock ownership is actually used as I'm having a senior moment here with my words, but as collateral for various loans. Mm-hmm. And if your stock is used as collateral for one loan, it can be hypothesized secondarily for two of them or three of them. And then if any of those go down, you still have a beneficial interest in that stock,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's like when your bank goes bankrupt, you have your third party unsecured creditor. So if the bank goes belly up and all the things that are supposed to protect you fail, you wind up as a stock ownership in a company that has no value at all.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this stuff in a functioning system works to the extent that it's intended to.
Yeah.
Not the way that you think it's intended, but the way that the system works is intended. And it works.
Yeah.
But if it starts to fall apart, then we have problems. So in the problem of the stable coin, that's in digital currency, that leads to another evolution in our financial system that's happening locally and globally, is taking the ledger, for example, at a bank. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, dual entry ledger. When you have a distributed ledger, now that your bank is only one element in the part of a state and national and international distributed ledger, which goes back to the digital currency. And see why I said this is just speculative sort of stuff. It doesn't make a difference. But now we have another thing that's coming out called tokens.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it goes back to the digital currency. If you have a token, if you tokenize in the financial industry, which is where it's starting, you have a share in Disney, for example, mm-hmm. and some company that is not Disney tokenizes that share. I don't even have the ability to imagine the directions that can go. But if you have a $1,000 share in Disney and you tokenize it by somebody else, and now it's worth $1,000 tokens, and that's used for whatever the financial system uses it for, what does that mean about your share in Disney, and how are you going to be able to monetize the token that you have? And in the worst case, if it works in the financial system, you know that it will be transferred into the consumer realm of the financial system, because that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have the equity in your house tokenized, and your kid doesn't have a credit card, but he can spend the tokens. How does that ripple through and affect your value of your equity in your home or other property now that it's been tokenized by someone else and spent for something that's ultimately got to be redeemed where? In the equity? And that's just a big question. And it is going to go back to something you had mentioned earlier about modernization of the department.
Yes.
What we call artificial intelligence is becoming a really big thing, too.
It is.
And it's my last major element in my conversation, is that in modernization, are you thinking that the possibility that AI can take over or assist in a lot of the operations of the Secretary's office?
It can, 100% it can. So
they're related.
They are related. Right, yeah. And I have some general thoughts. I mean, obviously, the financial system, as we know, is extremely complicated. And I'm not an economist. I'd butcher getting into it too in depth, but I can give some general thoughts and, how it relates to the office. Ultimately, I think, cash is, the American dollar is a fiat currency, right? It's not backed by anything other than the full faith and credit of the government. We know it fluctuates. We see hyperinflation right now, making it expensive for people to live. So I can tell you, personally, I like to buy gold and silver. So I like, there's my plug to gold and silver people out there. I like having that in the background because, the dollar does fluctuate. And, if things went belly up in the end, it's actually not worth anything. I do think with crypto, that it does have its value. I'll be honest with you, it took me a while to kind of wrap my head around it. I worked with some more tech folks that really kind of went through it with me about why it works in that world. And I was like, okay, it makes more sense now. It's still newer to me, but I'm pro crypto. I think there's a lot of benefits to it. I am pro stable token because in the end, you're just attaching it to something that's already fiat currency, right? So you're just kind of in a way converting it into another way that it can be used. And I think in Wyoming, we're always trying to, and I think for a good reason, find new ways to innovate or bring jobs and work here, right? And I can tell you in Cheyenne, I have met folks that have moved to Cheyenne to work in things like crypto or stable tokens. So it has brought jobs in. So I think it does bring in a positive benefit to our community. As far as the SOS, other than trying to understand it and be supportive of that industry, I'm not the expert in it. I'd be lying if I said I was. I know people who are the experts in it, though, that I can go to and ask to help me understand something better so I can be informed when I have to make a decision that involves that sphere. I think when you look at AI, I think AI is exploding quickly. I think it's a heck of a good tool, but I don't think we've figured out yet the impacts it's going to have on our society long term, and I think they will be large and consequential. My thought in relation to the Secretary of State's office is there are ways that we utilize it. I have a couple ideas on how we utilize it. There's two main ones. One, I would like to look at an all-internal AI that is not connected to the outside world. Essentially, it knows what we know in the SOS. So it can pop up on the website like a little chat bot. You're there at 11 o'clock at night and you have to get a business filing at midnight. You don't know how to do it or which form to use. You can interact with that and it can be like, you need form 17A and make sure you include this. That I think is where it can be really useful for the office. Or you're like, how do I update I'm a notary. We manage public notaries. How do I update and file to extend my notary license? What's required? And you just can't find it. Maybe you're not great online. Maybe you just are having a bad day and and that can be like, go here, and this is how you do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I do think there's a role for that in a customer service perspective to help customers 24/7. It's never going to replace, in my mind, a knowledgeable staff member on the phone helping you out, but I think it certainly helps in the evenings and weekends. As far as the business filings, right, something you can do with the modernization is that you can tie it into an AI system that can look for patterns or it can look for known bad actors. And when you're a human, and I've done these, I've done a couple hundred filings in a day where you're just churning through them, you don't have the time to even really comprehend the name of the company you're filing because you're just trying to get numbers done. If you pull that into a system where AI can look and go, hey, there's 39 filings this week from this company, and it sees that last year this company was involved in something we fined them for over ripping off senior citizens. That can then, it should never be solely the AI, ever. What it should do, though, is flag it for a human to review it and go, I better start digging into this and figure out what we should do. I think that's where it helps, is with that volume work and helping identify patterns or names or issues that you forgot, you're busy, or maybe a different staff member worked on it. It has that institutional knowledge and that ability to scan those thousands of things that happen a day. I mean, the Secretary of State's office does tens of thousands of filings a month. We have almost double the businesses that we have people in the state, right? I mean, so we're dealing with, it used to take, I remember Mondays that it would take four staff, 2 hours to open mail. So, I mean, you're looking, 8 hours staff time to get all that mail open. And that just shows the volume that comes in is truly overwhelming in that office. So I think there is a role where it can be limited to help out.
Very good. We're at the bottom of the hour. I've had you for 45, almost 40, almost 50 minutes. And we're just getting started.
Yeah. Well,
I would love to continue, but knowing that you have other things to do,
We got time for one more topic or discussion, though. Okay, if you want to bring something else up,
let me then segue into what I would normally do as a closing.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into a new office for the first time,
yeah,
you have a learning curve,
mm-hmm.
And I've enjoyed this conversation tremendously.
Me too.
I have a lot of areas where I would disagree, but mm-hmm. There are things that are conversationally things that you talk about, figure out why do we have a different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's up to you, I would love to have conversations in the future at your convenience.
We could come back and do this again. Reason. Yeah, 100%.
And especially, I would like to invite you, in the event that you are elected mm-hmm. and you're Secretary of State, come back and visit us in a year after you've got your feet on the ground
mm-hmm.
and you're bloody and bruised and you've won a few fights.
Yep.
Come back and tell us what you learned and what's important about what you learned
okay.
in that first year.
I would love to do that. Yeah. No, I'd love to do that. And, that's part of one of the reasons I'm running is something you mentioned is that having worked in that office, I have that experience that my opponents don't, so that I can hop in there day one and have that better understanding and have an ambitious timeline and go, I know the staff, right? I worked with them. I know the areas they struggle in and go, hey, I was here. I know we talked about it over coffee. Yeah. This is the problems you have. Let's start fixing it.
May I make a Henry comment?
Yeah.
These aren't your opponents. They're your competitors.
I mean, that's true. So... It's you play on words, yes.
Yeah, that's my job. I love words in English language, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, my vocabulary is going with my old age.
Yeah,
but I think I have something. Maybe no.
I think it left out a different one.
Is something else I was going to do? You can take, I know what I was doing. I'm talking about the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, if you're not familiar with that, that is the tinfoil hat version of the Constitution. Everybody that was in my political realm in mm-hmm. the 20s, 2020s, and Ron Paul, everybody had one of these.
Yep.
It's the Constitution and the Declaration.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. If somebody said, well, it doesn't say that. Yes, it is here. And we can be right.
Pull it right up, yeah.
And go check the internet. Go check the library. But one of the things that I have a lot of fun with words that people just generally do not have the skill. They've got the intelligence, but they've never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, which is political, it's the tinfoil hat California version.
Mm-hmm.
And when our forefathers wrote the Constitution, they set a Constitution for the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That implies two things. It's a plural states of the United States. Somehow between then and today, and I haven't been able to source when it actually changed.
Mm-hmm.
The title has been changed by the federal government to the Constitution of the United States, which is a singular unit, the government of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Not the multiple states, but the institution of the United States government. And the difference between that, I can understand why people would have said, well, it doesn't make any difference. It's either mm-hmm. rubber or. Well, that's not. Yeah. They're totally two different definitions. And if it's the United States government as an institution rather than the United States government as a coalition of the states, we can explain a lot of things that are happening today that we would not have thought because we didn't think about them.
Mm-hmm.
So words are important. The meanings are important.
Absolutely. I mean, when you go to law school, I mean, I've seen cases argue over the meaning of is in a phrase.
Well, or, yeah. That's Clinton's phrase.
Yeah.
What is.
What is. you know, in my appellate advocacy, we the entire case that I worked on for a whole semester hinged over the word use, using a firearm in the commission of a felony.
Yes.
Because if you brought it and it was never revealed, did that constitute using it?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and like brandishing a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly does that mean? You know, you can argue about that for 2 or 3 weeks.
This is why we still have lawyers. I always tell people, when everyone's like, I don't know why I need a lawyer, I'm like, well, tell me what use means with a firearm. That's why we have lawyers.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's good or bad, but there we are.
No, there is.
Yeah.
It's language.
It is.
That's why it's so much fun. And that's why I love the conversations, is because when you get into a conversation, if you have, like I mentioned before we got on the air, I was talking to one friend that said, you know, we're moving through space at 18,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. There's no arguing with that as a specific fact, but it's a specific fact out of context with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who knows how fast we're moving in terms of miles per hour when you put in the context of the universe, which doesn't have an end, and in relation to what, how fast are you moving?
Mm-hmm.
You may not be moving at all compared to where you are, but on the other hand, you may not be able to measure how fast you're going.
Yep.
And that's when you get into conversation with people, people have an idea, and what their idea of something is very, very difficult to budge, because
yes,
that's their form of their frame yes of reference. And that goes with Republican, Democrat, right, left, mm-hmm, gay, liberal,
pick us up. Across the gambit, yep.
And if I everything that I write, I'll say two things, and this is for Henry. I'm talking for myself. For everybody in the audience, this is not coming out of CJ's mouth. The society that we're born into is our de facto normal. It's because we know nothing until we come out of the womb and we start touching, feeling, and seeing and stuff like that. So whatever the society is, whether we're in the Stone Age or we're in the shooting rockets off into someplace in outer space, exploring worlds that have never been seen before, whatever that is, that's our particular, our personal view of the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is not the same as yours or or anybody that's listening to it. Unless you were born at the same second and the same day of the same year as somebody else, you don't. That society is different.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that everybody's got an opinion. We've got 8 billion people on the globe, and every one of them has a little clockwork going inside their skull that establishes their opinion. It's based on who they are, when they are, where they are, what they've experienced, what they've heard and told and been taught. So we're all different. So that means that your opinion is yours, and I can't say it's wrong. I can say your conclusions from your experience may be not as well as I thought they ought to be, but I can't say your opinion's wrong or not. But that's what makes conversations great, because you start talking about something and 2 minutes later you're off on a rabbit trail someplace that depends upon who you are, what you're talking about, and who you're talking with, and where that conversation goes. Belief is another problem. Because when you go into belief, now you cannot discuss it anymore. The dogmas and tenets are what you are required to do to be able to participate in that belief. And I'll just leave it there, because you can tell that that's a rabbit trail that nobody
wants
to do.
It's a deep trail, yeah, absolutely.
And we see that every day. Part of it has to do with our individual morals and ethics. And ethics, by the way, is another of those words. Ethics and morals are different.
Mm-hmm.
And if people conflate them, pretend they're both the same thing, it's like of and for the United States. They're not the same thing, but people conflate them as meaning the same thing. And if they do, then when you get up before the city council with your hair on fire because they're not fixing the pothole in your street, you've got a problem, because you're asking for something you're never going to get, because you don't understand what you're asking or the situation that you're getting in to make that question in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So we need civics 101, or its equivalent, like our conversations here. And I'm taking too much of your time, but when we start talking about this stuff, we start expanding our understanding of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. I can tell you a little bit about Secretary of State's office, but it's only because I've read a little bit about the Secretary of State's office. It's not what I would intuitively think that it is. And then you have to look at that also. The Secretary of State follows the legislation by your legislators, representatives, and senators. Where do they come from? We've got Pam Thayer here as my state representative. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got one. It may not be the same one. All of those people have different opinions, different sets of ethics and morals. The ethics are what counts because those are defined by whatever the rules of your organization are. And these conversations, I hope we continue because I get an opportunity to expand on things that I shouldn't be talking about except my friends.
Yeah. No, I get that. So, I'm glad I was here today and we could have this conversation.
Well, I'm glad that you made time for us.
Yeah, 100%.
It is a privilege for us to be able to hear candidates before they are in a position to do benefit or negative stuff. It's like positive rights and negative rights. As an attorney, you can understand what the difference between those two are.
Yeah.
But most people have no clue.
Well, and for anyone listening, I'd like, if this has spurred any questions you have for me about anything, reach out to me. I have a website, cjyoungforwyoming.com. You can send me questions. I answer them. Love to hear anything that's brought up. If you have a question, reach out. Let me know.
Facebook or website?
I do. Yeah, we're on Facebook. So yeah, website, cjyoungforwyoming.com. And we're on Facebook at also just search CJ Young for Wyoming Secretary of State and it'll come right up.
Do you take phone calls?
I do take phone calls. Yep. I got my number listed there. So you can, I'm on the road a lot, so you might have to leave a message, but I'll get back to you. And you know, many of my Rollins friends, you probably still have my cell number, so text me anytime. It's never changed.
Is there anything
321
before we close, your campaign manager or you have to say to close up our conversation?
I would just say, I enjoy this. I enjoy getting around the state and talking to people, doing these shows or just talking to people on street corners, because you're right, there's a lot of different beliefs and opinions and ideas out there, and I like hearing them all because I will adjust my thinking based on what I learn and what I hear, and because we're always learning, you're always learning throughout life. I truly believe that. What I think today is different than what I thought 10 years ago. You know, I have core beliefs, but those adjust because you learn so much as you get older and when you learn from other people. And you know, just like every state's different in the nation, the different parts of Wyoming are different than each other. And so when I go around, what's happening in Rollins might be different than Gillette or Casper or Cheyenne. And so you learn as you go around as a candidate how different things are affecting that. And that's something I enjoy about it. And so
let me ask one more question.
Yeah.
It occurred to me while we were talking, you were talking about the Wyoming general state. Wyoming is highly dependent upon the federal government's policies.
Yes.
And in the role of Secretary of State, where does that role fit with the legislative and other governing processes in relationship to the federal government's influence on the economy? And
so to be honest, it's pretty narrow. There's a couple places it does fit in when it involves an issue that the feds want to work on that involves the Secretary of State, oftentimes they will ask the Secretary of State to weigh in and give advice on it. There are certain things where it's much more close to where the feds involve themselves. Election security is a big one, right? All of our systems tie into things nationally, so working with the FBI or Homeland Security in the Secretary of State's office is a daily, weekly occurrence. Same for business fraud, things like that. There are impacts on the boards where things that the feds might see done on the land might be near or affect state lands. And so you have to kind of weigh in on that. So it's separate, but it is narrow. I'd say the biggest one is if the governor is not in the state, the Secretary of State is the acting governor. So that is one where anyone who's Secretary of State potentially has that role to step into it. Hopefully it's a weekend. Hopefully it's not a tragic thing where something happens to a governor, you got to step in. But then you have a really big role and impact with the feds, I'd say the most recent one that caught a lot of attention was the voter lists being given over to the feds. I think a lot of people had some frustration. Some people supported it. It's a mixed bag. I've had people ask me, and I always tell them, I say, look, I went to law school. I'm going to look at what the law is. We're going to follow the law. However, if it's not clear or it's not ambiguous, I represent Wyoming first before the feds. So if the feds have to sue me for it, they're going to have to sue me for it, because I'm not going to give over people's data unless it's crystal clear. That's kind of my thought on it.
Yeah, that's good thinking. And it brings up another, it's like I mentioned earlier, not that long ago, then you get off on a conversation, 2 minutes later, you're off on a rabbit trail.
Yeah.
And what you just mentioned is interesting, too, because when you look at the 16th Amendment and how that changed the relationship between citizens of the state and citizens of the federal government, and it's a dual citizenship, we have both of them, but the citizens of the United States, definition of a citizen of the state is different than what the citizens of a state are. And that's something that I went into Congress 25 years ago. And I got into an argument with the Secretary of State of California. Ultimately, they just said, we don't want to talk to you about this. And why don't you want to talk about it? Well, because they don't have they don't want to answer a truthful answer. They want to do what policy and the current political position is of the state. But it's been an interesting, and I'm sorry I went off on a
No, I've enjoyed it. Yeah, I've enjoyed this. So
there's so many things to talk about.
Yeah. I'd love to come back and talk more in the future.
Terrific. I don't have a lot of people I can talk about stuff like this.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime. Yeah. This is great. Henry, thank you. And to all my friends out there in Carbon County, thank you all. And I'll give a general plug. Don't forget to vote on August 18th for all your candidates. That's a big day. So that's next Tuesday.
Especially Secretary of State.
Ditto. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen of Rollins and Carbon County and around the globe on KRAWLP 97.9 FM, transmitting locally on FM, 3.5 mile radius for the people of Rollins to be able to speak their piece, whatever that might be. And around the world, you know, everything's connected. We're part of the world and the world's part of us. So enjoy the rest of the week and enjoy the weekend. And I will see you all later. And thank you very much, CJ Young and his campaign manager, for joining us for an hour, a little bit more. It's been very interesting and very informative. And don't forget to vote, like CJ just said. Catch you later, ladies and gentlemen. Bye.
Status quo.